back onto the shelf, then reaches below and draws a knife from the block. Don't do that, I lift my blades. Just tell me what's killing my friend and you live. He charges me and I throw my daggers in quick succession, embedding them deep within both his forearms. Blood streams to his elbows and he drops the kitchen knife, then bellows, staring down at his arms as his hands shake. I told you not to do that. I take 3 steps, then yank out both of my daggers by their hilts and kick him square in the stomach. He stumbles backward into the shelves. Debilitating pain explodes in my side, and I gasp. Tensing every muscle like that might somehow rewind the last 30 seconds and spare my broken rib. Fuck, I did not think that through. The cook brings his trembling hands together in a plea, revealing blue half moons under his nails. Please, no, I have a wife and 2 children. Blue. He hadn't been using a blue-edged towel. He'd been scrubbing the blue off his hands. I back out of the pantry slowly and find Riddick guarding the door. Flight jacket unbuttoned, sword drawn. We're looking for something blue.
You telling me there's actually something colorful on this aisle?
We both stare at the pots, pans, and dishes covering the newly deserted work table, then move toward it. Riddick sheathes his sword, picks up a pot, checks its cream-colored contents, and sets it back down. Even the freaking birds are white. Heiress birds. Blue nails. The scent of overripe fruit. That's it. I know what it— The cook yells as he storms out of the pantry and both Riddick and I whirl. My heart seizes as I catch sight of the cook's kitchen knife mid-flight. I dodge right, then surge forward toward the cook, walling off the pain like it belongs to someone else, and pull a move from Cortland's book. I throw the dagger with a snap of my wrist and pin the cook's bloodied hand to the fucking doorframe. He has the nerve to howl like he doesn't deserve it. Stay there, I order in Hedotic, then turn back toward Riddick. Air gushes from my lungs as Riddick looks down. The cook's knife is lodged in his side. Recovered correspondence of Cadet Violet Sorengale to Cadet Rhiannon Mateus. I wish you and Sawyer were with us, but I'm grateful to have Riddick, even if his sarcasm is wearing on Mira's last nerve. Chapter 37.
Riddick! Fear pours into me colder than a snow squall in January as I stumble forward. No, no, no! The words form a chant of pure denial in my head.
That's unfortunate,
Riddick says quietly, staring down at the knife that protrudes from his side.
Not Riddick. Not anyone, but especially not Riddick. This isn't happening. Not again. Not when we're thousands of miles from home and he hasn't graduated or fallen in love or gotten to live. You're all right, I whisper. Just keep it there and I'll get Traeger.
Riddick reaches for the knife's hilt.
No!
I lunge across him to grab his hand, but he's already yanked the blade free.
I slam my palms over his side to staunch the flow of blood. But there isn't any. No hole in his shirt either, just 2 slices through his flight jacket and a cut in the counter. The blade caught the edge of his flight jacket. Not him.
Riddick flies at the cook, and my hands slip off his stomach.
Asshole,
Riddick shouts, and I pivot to see him plow his fist into the cook's face.
I have 4 uniforms, but only 1 fucking flight jacket, and I punch, hate, punch, sewing.
Riddick yanks my dagger from the cook's hand, and the man slides down the doorframe, his eyes fluttering shut.
For fuck's sake, you're supposed to be the civilized aisle.
He wipes my blade on the cook's tunic, then turns and walks back toward me.
What is the wisdom in a kitchen cook attacking 2 trained killers?
His face falls.
Vi, you all right?
I gulp for air and nod.
Yeah, I just thought... But I'm fine, and you're fine, and everything is fine, except Garrett, so we should...
Understanding softens his eyes, and he wraps his arm around my shoulders, pulling me into a quick but gentle hug.
Yeah, I love you too.
I nod, and we break apart. I know what they put in the cake. Good, Riddick gestures at the door, and we both head back toward the dining room. And I want a patch for this shit, Violet. A quest squad patch, understand? Loud and clear. I make it into the dining room first and find two of the triumvirate retching while Zayden and Traeger monitor Garrick as Talia sobs. Arik waits on the edge of the table, dagger in hand, and Faris sits hunched over with his arms around his stomach.
He's breathing on his own, but it's shallow, Zayden says. Tell me you have good news.
Almost, I try to smile. Book, Dane slides my father's field guide across the table. Arik catches it, then hands it over.
He'll be dead in 10 minutes,
Faris mutters.
No, he won't.
I flip through the book to the chapter I need, then run my finger down the flora chart Dad drew until I reach Zakia berries. Poisonous when allowed to ferment, treat with fig or lime to the back of the throat within 1 hour.
Thank you, Dad.
I've got it, I tell Zayden, then slam the book shut and look over at Dane.
Upstairs on the veranda by our room, there's a silver tray. Get the figs.
Dane nods, then takes off at a run. I motion to Arik, and he slides from the table. I need 5 small cups filled with water, fresh, not salt. 1 is for Dane. He heads into the kitchen and Riddick follows.
Figure out how to get him to swallow, I say to Zayden, then lean against the edge of the table, grimacing at the pain in my ribs as I lean down to Faris. We're fighting a war for the future of our world. This shouldn't be a competition. Logic and wisdom dictate that you assist us so you don't become us.
It is your war,
he growls as Dane sprints back in.
Crush it, dice it, whatever you have to do to mix it with enough water to get it down his throat, I tell Dane.
On it. He steps onto a chair, then walks across the table, jumping off once he clears Garrick's head. Then he, too, disappears into the kitchen.
It will be our war, I lean down as Faris shudders.
You think they won't come here once they've drained every last ounce of magic from our home?
We're safe. He glares up at me. We have no magic here.
Foolish, foolish man. I shake my head. They'll drain you.
His eyes flare a second before he groans in pain. Zayden and Traeger have Garrick on his side when Dane returns with the fig slurry and a spoon. Arik and Riddick follow, each carrying 2 small cups of water. I take them 1 by 1 and set them behind me out of Faris's reach, then dig my nails into the palm of my hand to keep from panicking as the guys work to get the solution down Garrick's throat.
He has 1 hour, according to Dad, and it hasn't been...
Garrick sputters, spitting some of the slurry out, but his eyes flash open.
I sag in relief as Zayden yells at him to wake the fuck up and drink it.
It takes him 4 big swallows before the cup is drained, and he falls back, his head landing in Traeger's lap. Zayden's worried gaze snaps to mine.
Give it time, I say gently. We're under the hour mark. He'll be all right.
A muscle in his jaw ticks, making the bruise ripple, but he nods.
Now is when you pray that Garrick wakes in the next few minutes, I whisper to Faris as Rosalind cries softly on the floor. You pray to Hedion, or whoever will listen, that you are not as clever as you thought you were, because that's the only way he's going to let you out of this alive.
Faris's purple eyes narrow up at me.
Why would I pray for him to wake and kill me?
Not Garrick, I shake my head.
Zayden.
Sigale is widely known as one of the most ruthless dragons in Navarre, and she chose him for a reason. Fear streaks through his gaze. I sit back and wait. 3 minutes later, Garrick groans and opens his eyes.
This is my least favorite isle.
A relieved laugh bubbles through my lips, and Zayden's head falls back like he's giving thanks to Zanal, or perhaps Malik, for not claiming his best friend.
You didn't win,
Faris snaps. You're dying. I think that qualifies you as the loser. I slide off the table. Zayden jumps to his feet and barrels past me, yanking Faris from the chair and shoving him against the wall.
Oh, shit. And here I thought I'd been bluffing. My stomach hollows as Zayden hits Faris with a bone-crunching right hook.
You poisoned him?
He slams him into the wall again.
You tried to poison her?
He draws a blade from his thigh and sets it at Faris's neck.
Whoa, whoa, Riddick walks toward them. We can't kill potential allies, even if they suck.
Zayden turns a glare on Riddick that freezes the blood in my veins. That isn't him. No, I move without thinking, stepping between them and pushing Riddick back with a hand against his chest.
No! Riddick lifts his brows but steps back, and Dane's eyes narrow as I turn to Zayden.
Look at me. I take hold of his forearm, but he doesn't back off Ferris's throat. A thin line of blood appears at the blade's edge. Look at me! Zayden's gaze drops to mine and my stomach flips. It's like I'm staring at a stranger dressed up as the man I love. Get off the ice, I whisper. Pull your shit together and come back to me because I need you. Not this. You. His eyes flicker with recognition. A second later, he pushes away from Ferris, lowers his blade, walks past me, past Riddick and Arik and Dane, past his own mother and Garrick and Traeger, to lean against the wall by the door. He sheathes his blade and folds his arm, staring at the plate in front of my seat. You have a plan here? Dane asks, his gaze swinging from Zayden to me. Or are we winging it? I have a plan. Sort of. That plan is just rapidly deteriorating the longer it takes Ferris to buckle. Killing the Triumvirate isn't going to secure the alliance we need, and naturally, Ferris knows that. Can you get everyone ready to fly? Dane nods. Arik, help Traeger and Garrick and start moving him toward Krod. Riddick, let's pack everyone's shit. They all move, leaving Zayden and me with the Triumvirate and his mother. Sit, I order Ferris, pointing to his chair, and to my utter surprise, he does. What should I charge you for the antidote?
Meet Malik, he snarls.
It's a shame you don't know more about Tirindor, seeing as your wife lived there for 10 years. I move to the edge of the table.
Arryn-mint, of all things.
Ironic that it's your ignorance and not mine we discovered tonight.
You'll never make it out of here alive, he swears.
We will. I put the 4 glasses in front of me and pull 4 vials from my left front pocket. It's only a question of if we leave here with an alliance, an understanding, or a newly elected triumvirate. He growls, but his gaze tracks my motions as I pour the vials into the water, 1 per glass. The clear liquid quickly turns black and grows sludgy. What's it going to be? I ask Ferris.
My staff knows what's happened here. The city guards will shoot your dragons from the sky, he warns.
I highly doubt that. I take Arik's unused fork and stir the slurries. Because in a minute, my sister is going to bring one of your guards in, and you're going to tell them to let us go, as we have a newfound allyship rooted in... I glance at Talia, who has tucked her knees to her chest as she writhes in pain. Bloodline. Guess someone's contract marriage worked out as intended, because your wife's son is the Duke of Tirindor. Naturally, you'd want to nurture that relationship.
You would never be able to trust me. I'll turn on you the second you leave.
You won't, I shake my head, because like you said, your staff knows what happened here. You can certainly keep them quiet, but you can't keep us quiet. Do you truly think your isle would support your next bid for power if they knew you were outsmarted? In your own home? He clenches his fists as his stomach heaves, but he doesn't vomit.
How did you do it?
Now that's progress. Arryn-mint looks just like regular mint, which is why its export is outlawed. By itself, steeped in milk or turned into tea with lemon or a little chamomile, it works wonders for sleep and healing. But when you combine it with some other pretty ordinary herbs, say the shredded bark of the Tarsilla bush, it becomes a deadly poison. And Tarsilla grows all along your beaches. I lean down, careful not to jostle my ribs, so I'm at his eye level. Ask me why we're going to fly out of here without you saying a single word.
Why? He grinds out.
Because you love your sons, I smile. That's why you sent them out of the house tonight. Fear widens his eyes. Ask why there are only 6 dragons outside. I lift my brows and wait, but his breath starts coming alarmingly fast. If you're going to be dramatic, I'll just give you the answer. It's because the seventh currently sits next to the window at your parents' house where your boys sleep, where she'll stay until she knows we're out of range of any weapons you might be hiding. Approval floods the bond, and I imagine Tarn's chest puffing with pride.
That's impossible, Ferris shakes his head. Someone would have seen.
Not when that dragon is an Irid. Sweat drips down his forehead, catching in his eyebrows.
You wouldn't. They're children.
You really want to take that risk? I stand and slide the first glass his way. Or do you want to drink and live?
Ferris, Talia cries. Please!
You didn't outsmart me. None of this happened.
He reaches for the glass. I didn't outsmart you alone, I admit. My father helped. He clutches the antidote.
The eyes. I should have recognized your eyes, your Asher Daxton's girl.
One of them, yes. A slow smile spreads across my face. And the other currently has command of your house. Make your choice. He drinks. Zayden doesn't so much as look at his mother when we walk away. We hover out of crossbolt range until Andarna joins us, then fly through the night, heading northwest along the trading routes. We only have two major isles left to search for the Irids, and as much as I enjoy not being hunted by Theophany, we can't stay out here long enough to thoroughly scour all the minor ones. Every day we fly lengthens the time it will take to get home, where the least of our worries will be the court-martial waiting for us if we don't bring with us the assistance we disobeyed orders to find. By morning, there's still no sight of land. My chest feels like it's clamped in a permanent vice. Gods, if I'm wrong, I won't have only almost gotten Garrick killed. I'll be the end of the rest of us, too. I sleep on and off in the saddle, my exhaustion the only thing capable of outweighing the pain in my ribs. Luckily for me, the power in the sun shield rune I carry still holds, and my skin remains unburned as the temperature warms. By the time the sun is directly above us, we reach the southeastern tip of the archipelago that leads to Zelna.
Should be another hour until we reach the mainland,
Tarn says, as we sail over the first island, which looks small enough to be swallowed at the slightest hint of a storm. Can the others make it that long? Andarna is already strapped at his chest.
I can't exactly ask them, but no one has snapped at my wings, which I find to be a good sign.
Or they're all too tired to. I twist as far as my ribs will allow and see that the griffins are mostly holding the center of the formation. Kirillair is lagging a little.
Is she?
Tarn doesn't look back.
Or is it Silurane?
I block the sun with my hand and focus hard on the second row of griffins. You're right, it looks like she's fallen back to keep pace with Silurane. But Kath and Molvik have their backs covered another row behind.
I know.
We cross over the next island and the aqua water that surrounds it on all sides.
Seems Catriona has found someone worth lagging behind for.
The thought brings a smile to my face as I settle in for the last part of the flight. True to his estimate, it's about an hour before we fly past the white sand beaches and their swaying palm trees, and their waving humans. That's unusual. No one screams and runs or mans the wall of crossbolts as we pass over the coastal town. They just wave.
It's unsettling,
Tarn agrees. It's not a bad thing to be liked, Andarna clicks out of her harness and flies off to Tarn's right, tipping her wing when a group of children runs across a field, their arms extended. I breathe a sigh of relief as we sail over green-leafed trees. Perhaps the color isn't quite as rich as the tones on the continent, but is definitely a welcome sight after the monochromatic scheme of Hydotis. A sparkling river leads us into the hills, and we pass a sun-drenched waterfall before reaching a plateau, then continue due west along the winding riverbed,
Three more waterfalls and rises in elevation later, the capital city of Zortris comes into view and takes my breath away. It's situated at the base of an enormous curved waterfall, and the way the river splits around the city makes it appear as an island of its own. The city walls look like they rise from the water itself, and the structures beyond defy any and all architectural logic, as though vertical additions were erected upon existing buildings as they were needed, growing the city skyward. The South Bridge is the main gate, I remind Taryn, and he banks left along the southern branch of the river, flying toward the enormous structure that spans the water.
Is that a gate or an amphitheater?
Taryn asks as a huge clearing comes into view at the end of the bridge.
Both?
Along the western tree line sits rows upon rows of benched seating, enough to fit hundreds, maybe thousands, of people. And they're half full. Do you think this is normal, or the other option makes me a little queasy?
They're expecting us, Andarna replies with excitement, descending into the field before Taryn. Her left wing trembles as she flares them wide and she lands a second before we do, dead center in the field. The crowd comes to its feet in a raucous cheer as Taryn tucks his wings in and prowls forward to Andarna's side. A few people dart from the stands and make a run for the bridge, too smiley to be fleeing for their lives.
They're spreading the news.
Taryn turns his head slowly, and I mirror his movement, lifting my flight goggles and taking in what is easily the oddest and potentially most dangerous arrival we've faced yet. We're more than outnumbered, though no one appears to be holding any weapons against us. Nor do they approach, they simply watch. The stands rise a good 20 feet over Taryn's head, and the people in them cheer louder as our squad lands in a single long line. The earth shudders with each dragon's arrival, but the griffins fit themselves into formation gracefully. The excitement in the air is a living, palpable thing, roaring in my ears louder than the waterfall in the distance, clinging to my skin with more tenacity than the stifling heat and humidity, humming along my veins as though their zeal is contagious.
This is weird.
I glance to the right and note Andarna scraping through the manicured grass with a single talon.
Stay close.
Any closer and I'll be under him, she retorts, her full claws flexing in the ground.
Stop tearing up their grass before they...
Taryn lowers his head to the ground and inhales so deeply, his sides flare as his lungs expand.
Do you feel that?
Feel what? The buzz from the crowd grows to a fever pitch, and a wave of energy rushes up my body, prickling the back of my neck in a feeling that reminds me of... I gasp.
Magic.
An excerpt from Zelna, Isle of Zinal, by Major Asher Sorengale. To live among the Zilni, you must prepare to accept luck as your guide. And chaos as your standard. Chapter 38. No wonder the leaves are almost fully green. Zelna has magic. Not enough to channel or even properly shield, and nowhere in the realm of wielding. But there are definitely two strands of power trickling down the bonds from Taryn and Andarna. I shove my flight jacket into my pack so I don't sweat to death and make quick work of dismounting. Taryn dips even lower in deference to my aching ribs, and I pat the scales above his talon in thanks as I walk onto the field. To my right, Andarna flicks her head left and right repeatedly, like she can't fully focus on one sight before another catches her attention. And on my left, Riddick stares up at Atrum, saying something I can't hear over the noise of the crowd. Just beyond him, Traeger throws his head back in laughter, then reaches up to scratch under Silurain's silver-feathered jaw. The griffin tilts her head to give him easier access and closes her eyes. I can't help but wonder how long she's had that particular itch, since it's in a place she can't reach.
Can they talk?
I move forward just enough to see down the line of our squad and watch the same scene playing out among riders and flyers. Even Zayden is paused before Sigail, though it looks like any conversation they might be having isn't going his way.
"We all can,"
Taryn replies with a sound I'd almost call a sigh of contentment. I give myself a second to smile, to revel in the happiness of my friends who have been denied the closest of their relationships for the last couple of weeks. Then I look up at the mass of people gradually quieting and taking their seats, and scan down the rows to the bottom without finding a single weapon out of its scabbard. Color fills the crowd, but everyone sitting in the front row is dressed in identical sleeveless tunics, the shade of apricots. For as much excitement as they're showing, none of them rush forward to greet us. In fact, the people joining climb the seats farthest to the right as they enter the field, as though not to obscure the crowd's view for even a second. A wisp of a shadow brushes against my mind, and my smile deepens.
"Hi there,"
Zayden says as he strides toward me, the corners of his mouth curving. He's shucked his flight jacket, too, and pushed up the sleeves of his uniform to his elbows.
"Hi there,"
I grin, somehow having found home thousands of miles away from the continent.
"Everything good with Sigail?"
"She's yelling,
but I'll take it over silence any day." A muscle in his jaw pops as he reaches my side, then turns to face the crowd.
"Pretty sure she spent the last week or so cataloging every one of my missteps, given how quickly she listed them."
"I'm sorry," I brush the back of my hand against his.
"She has every right to be pissed."
He laces our fingers and holds tight as he studies our surroundings.
"I need you to make me another promise, Violet."
"That sounds serious." I smile at Riddick as he heads our way with a definite bounce in his step. The others aren't far behind him.
"Look at me."
Zayden softens the sharp command with a brush of his thumb over mine. My gaze snaps to his and my smile falls at the intensity of his stare.
"What do you want me to promise?"
"That you'll never do that again."
I blink.
"You're going to have to be more specific."
"You put yourself between Riddick and me.
It seemed like you might hit my friend." I lift my brows. "And you weren't exactly yourself."
"That's my point."
Fear flashes across his face before he quickly masks it.
"There's no telling what I could have done to you. It's all I've been able to think about."
"Is it just me, or are we the equivalent of the circus coming to town?"
Riddick asks.
"You won't hurt me," I argue for the 100th time. "Even when you wanted to kill me last year, you never hurt me. Even when you lack your emotions, you're still you."
"Oh, we're definitely the show," Kat answers Riddick. "This might be my favorite aisle." Traeger takes Kat's hand. "What do you think, Violet?"
"Me, without any restraint or reason."
Zayden lowers his brows. "How about I decide when I think you're too dangerous to approach?"
"I think I know when I'm too dangerous to approach."
He leans in.
"Don't mind them," Riddick's tone sings. "They're back to doing whatever it is they do when they ignore everyone around them and pretend they're the only people in existence."
"This from the same man who thinks I need to know how to kill him?" I lift my chin. "Which is it, Zayden? Am I too precious to get close, or am I the one who needs to know which shadow is yours?" He gives me a look Sigail would be proud of, and I hold his gaze.
"I wouldn't be able to live with myself if I hurt you."
The sun catches the amber flecks in his eyes, and I nearly relent at the plea in his tone. "And I won't be able to live with myself if I stand there and watch you hurt Riddick." I squeeze his hand. "I take full responsibility for my safety. You are a giant battle flag waving in the wind right now, Zayden, but you're my battle flag. And you'd do the same thing in my position."
"Hey, I hate to break up whatever moment you're having," Riddick says, "but everyone's here and their emissary is headed this way."
"This discussion isn't over,"
Zayden warns as we turn our attention to the field. "Happy to win the fight again later," I squeeze his hand one last time, then let go as a woman in an orange tunic and matching scabbard walks toward us, carrying a cone-shaped object half my height.
I love you.
So fucking stubborn, he sighs. I love you.
All down the line, the dragons lower their heads in warning. The woman doesn't flinch, but the crowd falls quiet. I take a steadying breath and send a prayer up to Zanal himself that this encounter goes better than our last.
Welcome to Zelna, the woman says in the common language, then grins as she approaches, her white teeth sharply contrasting her deep brown cheeks.
She's beautiful, with joyful brown eyes, a halo of black airy curls, and thick curves.
I am Calixta, mistress of today's festivities.
Festivities? My brows scrunch at the term, and Riddick rocks back on his heels. Zayden's head tilts. Calixta pauses about 5 feet from my boots, then glances across our squad and begins to speak in Zelish. I blink. Any studying I did is completely useless. Nothing on the page could prepare me for hearing it spoken. It's a lilting, flowy language where one word seems to run into the next. Dane replies slowly from my right, the words coming out like he's in pain. Arik sighs from beside Zayden, then proceeds to speak like he was freaking born here. Dane looks ready to murder him.
Excellent, Calixta replies in the common language. I am happy to speak in your tongue if it brings you joy.
She turns to me.
Your translator says you are the leader of this glorious assembly.
I'm really starting to loathe that word.
I'm Violet Sorengale. We've come in hopes of securing an alliance, she beams. Yes, word of your travels reached us a few weeks ago, and we have been waiting ever since.
Here? Riddick asks. You've all been waiting out here?
Of course not, she scoffs. People come to the festival grounds as they have time, in hopes they will be the first to see the dragons. And Zanal is certainly with those of us who chose today.
Her gaze sweeps over the riot.
Which is the Irid?
I draw back. Cortlan? Cortlan, Zayden agrees. And Darna lifts her head and Taryn growls down the bond.
Way to give yourself away, I narrow my eyes at her. It looks black, Calixta remarks.
And Darna blinks and her scales shift color, blending into the background.
She, I correct Calixta. Her name is Andarna, and she's the only Irid on the continent.
I wince. On Amaralis. We're searching for the rest of her kind and allies to hopefully fight alongside us in a war against those who wield dark magic.
She is marvelous, Calixta bows low and deep.
And Darna shimmers again, her scales returning to black, then lowers her head when Taryn huffs a breath at her.
Our queen is delighted you've sought us out and is eager to come to your aid. We have always revered dragonkind.
She tilts her head towards Silurine.
And the griffins, of course.
There's no fucking way this is that easy. Dad wrote about playing games picked at random to gain entrance.
May we speak to your queen? I ask. We've brought a prince of Navarre to speak on our kingdom's behalf. Of course, Calixta replies. But first...
Here we go, Riddick mutters under his breath. My thoughts exactly.
We must see what gifts Zanal has chosen for you.
She finishes.
If you are willing to play and accept whatever gift the God of Luck presents you with,
she lifts a finger,
without complaint, then you will be granted entrance to our city, where our queen waits.
I expected dice, or even a board game, not gifts. I admit to Zayden.
There's a trick here, Zayden warns, but there's not enough power to read her.
And if we complain, I ask, all traces of amusement drain from her face.
If you do not accept that luck determines your fate, that Zanal may gift you with great fortune, or take it, then we cannot ally ourselves with you. We do not accept those who do not adjust their sails in a storm.
Not such a random choice of game, then. They want to see how we handle disappointment.
No whining, Zayden remarks. I can respect that.
Looking left, then right, I meet the eyes of every person on our squad, starting with Traeger. One by one, they nod, ending with Mira on the right, who immediately rolls her eyes afterward. We'll do it, I tell Calixta.
Wonderful! She spins back to the crowd and lifts the pointed end of the hollow cone to her mouth before shouting into it. The crowd roars.
She said we'll play, Arik tells me, leaning forward to see around Zayden.
Where were these language skills when we were translating journals last year? I ask. He looks at me like I've gained another head.
I was raised to be a diplomat. Diplomats don't speak to dead people.
You didn't think we should know you speak fluent everything? I arch a brow.
And nullify Atos's reason for joining, what is it Riddick calls us? Quest squad?
Arik shakes his head.
Let us see what Zanal shall gift you with,
Calixta says over her shoulder, then walks toward the crowd. Five people emerge from the right side of the steps, four carrying a table and one a chair and a canvas bag.
Guess we follow, I say to the others.
We walk as a line across the field and I stifle a yawn. The sooner we get this over with, the sooner we can find our beds. I can't remember the last full night of sleep we had without pulling watches. Devarelli, maybe?
I don't care if she hands you a steaming pile of goat shit, Mira lectures down the line.
No one complains, got it? Smile and thank her. This is our last real chance to secure an army.
What if it's cow shit? Riddick asks. That's considerably heavier.
No complaining, Drake snaps from the left.
Fuck, it's like traveling with my parents, Riddick mutters.
What are you thinking? I ask Zayden as the table is set on the field about 20 feet in front of the crowd.
They'd better have an army worth handling cow shit for.
His gaze continuously moves over the area.
And I'm not a fan of it being 2,000 to 11, even with Dragonfire at our back.
Agreed. Let's get this over with.
Excellent idea. I'd like to find lunch,
Tarn says. Three of the furniture carriers scatter, leaving Calixta facing us in the chair behind the table, and two men off to her right. The closest holds the cone.
Stop,
Calixta says, holding out her hand when we're about 6 feet from the edge of the table.
We stop.
I wave a bug out of my face and glance up at the sky, hoping for some form of approaching cloud cover to shade us from the heat. But there's none to be found.
Guess Zanal has decided we'll bake in our leathers while we wait.
Calixta reaches into the canvas bag, then pulls out a stack of cards as thick as the width of my forearm. They're the size of my face and have a bright orange pattern on their backs.
Each card represents a gift, she says, mixing them with a skill that speaks to practice.
The closest man translates for the crowd, his voice booming through the cone and the taller one to his right signs. Calixta spreads the cards face down in a long arc across the table.
You will pull the card Zanal inspires you to choose and receive your gift.
The men translate, and the crowd murmurs in anticipation.
There's no way 2,000 people gather to watch us open presents.
My stomach turns at the looks of rapt fascination among the crowd.
Don't pick the shit card, Zayden replies.
Step forward and choose,
Calixta points to Mira. Every muscle in my body tenses, and a wave of dizziness makes me brace my feet apart.
Not right now, I beg my body.
Mira walks to the right edge of the table and plucks a card without pause. Calixta takes it and smiles.
Zanal gifts you wine.
She shows us the painted wine bottle, then rotates it for the crowd as the men translate. The applause is instant, and a middle-aged woman with curly brown hair runs forward from the left front row carrying a bottle of wine.
"Thank you," Mira says as the woman hands it to her, and Calixta translates. The woman bows her head, and Mira mirrors the gesture before turning toward me.
"I'm gonna fucking need this," she says with a fake smile, then falls back into line as the woman hurries to her seat.
One by one, Calixta calls us forward, moving down the line. Marin receives two orange tunics from a short, smiling man with a shiny, bald head. Dane's card reveals a hand, and when he offers his to the woman who walks over to him, she slaps him across the face so hard his head turns in our direction. I swallow my gasp and force a blank expression onto my face when I catch Calixta glancing my way.
Message received. We can't complain about anyone else's gifts either.
Dane blinks twice, then thanks the woman and inclines his head. Riddick barely stifles a snort, but quickly schools his features when I glance sideways at him.
Do not laugh, I warn Zayden, fighting off another tide of dizziness.
I'm more worried about the implications of that hit, he answers without losing his professionally bored expression, and a little jealous of the woman who delivered it.
Garrick is given a rusted steel bucket. Arik receives a fractured hand mirror that immediately cuts his thumb when the man hands it to him top first. My heart pounds like I'm on the mat as Zayden chooses his card. He's given an empty glass box the size of his foot with pewter hinges and edges.
Better than getting slapped.
A smile tugs at my mouth, but it doesn't calm my racing heart as I step forward. I choose a card on the far left end of the arch, then hold my breath as I hand it to Calixta.
The compass, she announces, and the men translate.
A tall man with bronzed skin and short black hair comes forward from the right, and I turn to face him. His dark eyes study me for a moment that quickly becomes awkward. I lift my chin, and his mouth tilts into a smirk as he nods subtly, as though finding my reaction worthy. Extending his hand silently, he offers me a black compass on a dark chain. I glance down as I take it and notice that the needle doesn't point anywhere near north. It's broken. Now I understand the smirk.
Thank you, I tell him, and bow my head.
Use it wisely, he replies, his eyes blatantly mocking me as he bows.
Broken compass, I tell Zayden as I fall back into line.
You can put it in my box of nothingness, he replies. We'll keep them on the bedside table.
I'm not carrying this thing home. But for now, I lift the chain over my head.
It's bad luck to throw away a gift from Zanal, Zayden lectures as Riddick heads to the table.
Riddick draws a card with a painted pair of lips and the crowd cheers.
The way this is going, I half expect the lanky blonde man approaching Riddick to hand him a tin of lip rouge or maybe a pair of lips that's been sliced off a dead cow. Instead, the man clasps both sides of Riddick's face, then smacks a loud kiss onto each of his cheeks.
Thank you, Riddick says,
and the two bow, then part. He lifts his brows at me before taking his place in line.
Kat is given a gold necklace with a dangling ruby the size of my thumb.
Drake draws next.
The claw,
Calixta announces, holding the painted symbol high, and the crowd cheers when the men translate. My heart jumps into my throat as a bear of a man marches forward from the right, huge fists swinging by his side.
Drake doesn't flinch.
I ready myself for the punch that's inevitably coming and wonder if the man's nails have been filed into sharp points. He stops in front of Drake, then reaches into the front pocket of his tunic and takes out a mewling kitten.
Drake receives the orange tabby with both hands, then thanks him and bows.
What the fuck are we going to do with that thing for the rest of the trip? Zayden questions.
keep Andarna from eating it? A bead of sweat drips down the side of my face, and I wobble as my head starts to swim. But I keep upright.
Dizzy?
Zayden asks, sidestepping so my shoulder rests against his arm.
I could use some sleep like everyone else, I answer, but lean a little on him.
Traeger draws a card from the center and hands it to Calixta.
The arrow! She holds it high, revealing a painted arrow, then turns it to the audience.
The men translate, and the crowd falls silent. Traeger staggers backward. Time slows to a crawl as he turns toward us with three fumbling footsteps. His gaze lurches for Kat, and then he falls to his knees and sways. An arrow protrudes from his heart. He's dead before Riddick and I can catch him.
An excerpt from Zelna, Isle of Zinal, by Major Asher Sorengale. Sometimes the best gift the god of luck can give is his absence.
Chapter 39.
No, no, no!
I stare down at Traeger's unseeing eyes as Riddick and I lower him to his back. And a muffled sound comes from the left. Riddick's chest heaves and his fingers tremble as he presses them to the side of Traeger's throat. He looks over at me and shakes his head, telling me what I already knew.
No!
I shriek, but nothing works past my throat. Do not react! Zayden's wingleader voice barrels through the roaring in my head, and his hands grip my shoulders. Riddick's eyes flutter shut, and he bows his head as I'm lifted to my feet.
Traeger's dead. It's my mission, my responsibility, my fault.
Focus on me, Zayden orders, turning me in his arms. You react, and he will have died in vain.
My head swims, and the world slows again, my thoughts drowned out by the sound of my racing heart. It pounds against my ribs and beats in my ears as I look right.
Drake's arms bulge as he holds Kat back, his hand covering her mouth. That muffled sound. It's her screaming. Drake's face crumples for the length of a heartbeat as he whispers in her ear. Her feet stop kicking, and she sags against his chest.
Garrick sets Riddick back in formation, his stunned gaze locked on the ground.
No, not the ground. Traeger's body. Garrick's hands steady Riddick's shoulders for another couple of heartbeats before he leaves him to stand on his own in front of the silent, waiting crowd.
Violence, Zayden demands.
My focus drifts toward him, but it catches as I look past Riddick and across the field. Every dragon holds their head lowered and aimed in our direction. But the griffins are all facing inward, toward Silurane. She stumbles forward with her neck arched, her silver feathers shining in the sun. Three steps, four, five. Kirillaire follows, then moves to Scylla's side, shouldering some of the griffin's weight. Scylla strains for one more step, like she can reach Traeger if she just tries hard enough. But her ankles give, then her shoulders, and she collapses, her beak sliding down Kira's side before her head slams into the ground. My eyes sting, and my fingernails bite into my clammy palms as the griffins slowly turn to face the crowd, their eyes all narrowing in time with our dragons. And Darna roars down the bond in a tidal wave of grief and rage that rattles my soul.
She is gone,
Tarn says, and Kira extends a wing over Scylla's body. Something wet tracks down the left side of my face.
Violet, Zayden shouts, and his voice cuts through the haze. I can't do this for you. I wish I could, but they know you're in command.
In command? I've never hated those words more. I suck in one full breath, then another, and the world spins back to normal speed. Wrath stiffens my spine, and I cut off the part of me that cries for Traeger and Scylla, leaving only the weapon Besgaeth forged me to be. But it's not my blade the situation calls for. Fighting would be too easy. Killing them all for what they've done would be a fitting punishment.
The relentless sun beats into my leathers as I step out of Zayden's grasp and turn slowly toward the crowd. I look past Arik and his clenched, bleeding fists, past Garrick as he moves back into formation near the bucket, and find Mira staring at me. Her eyes say what her mouth can't. Handle this. Even with her arms wrapped around Marin holding the flyer upright, she's never looked more like our mother. And our mother died so we'd have a chance to fight this war. If we fail here, we lose the army they offer. If I fail, we will have lost another squad mate, another year mate, for nothing. With a nod, I square my shoulders and face Calixta, finding the archer at her side. I take the two steps that bring me to Traeger's body and lock eyes with the weathered man who took his and Scylla's lives. The weight of the crowd's silent stares only serves to harden my resolve as I lift my chin before bowing my head and expel another piece of my humanity. Thank you.
Fuck them.
8 hours later, Mira, Zayden, Arik, and I return to the moonlit field where the rest of our squad waits with Traeger's and Scylla's bodies. A straggling group of onlookers still sits in the stands, drinking and celebrating. Taryn opens one golden eye as I approach, then closes it, falling back asleep with Sigale's head resting on his back. And Darna is passed out close enough to feel secure, but a wing's length farther away than when she was a juvenile. Every griffin and dragon but Kath sleeps, and the red flicks his sword tail as if to remind any onlookers who lurk in the stands that he's on watch. I can't blame them for their exhaustion. They've basically flown from Umbriel without a break, and they swept over the aisle today looking for Andarna's kind while we negotiated. And the Irids aren't here. They aren't fucking anywhere. Fire burns in my stomach, and for the first time, I allow myself to consider what happens if we don't find them. Andarna will be crushed. Melgrin will be furious. Atos will throw us all into a cell for dereliction of duty. We could lose the war to the Dark Wielders. I refuse to let that happen.
At least we're already in with the enemy, Taryn grumbles.
Go back to sleep. Zayden isn't the enemy. He's been infected by it. We find Kat sitting against Kira's side, her head on Marin's shoulder, and the others hovering nearby. Everyone's gazes turn our way as we join them. Is it done? Drake asks. It's done, Mira answers. Arik agreed to terms which were oddly favorable to us. They'll send an advance party within the next couple of months and the rest of their troops whenever we're ready to receive all 40,000 of them. Drake nods and looks Kat's way. We'll be able to man thousands of crossbolts, drive Wyvern to the ground for awaiting infantry, increase patrols. I get it. Kat interrupts without lifting her gaze. She's better than I am, because I don't. Did you all eat? I ask Riddick. He nods. They brought us food and offered us beds in town, but his gaze darts left to where Scylla and Traeger lie. Good choice, Zayden says, his hand resting on the small of my back. We have to bury him, Marin says, and her jaw trembles for a second. And burn her. Griffins, they prefer to be burned. We should burn him, too. Kat's voice is flat, her eyes vacant. He would want to be with her. She blinks, then looks up at us. Not here. No part of them remains here. Understood. I nod, my ribs threatening to crush the air from my lungs. I owe her whatever she wants, Marin too, and Nev and Bragan and Kai, and a boulder wedges itself in my throat. I'll have to tell Rhi I lost Traeger when she's worked so hard to keep us all alive.
So we take them south to Loisam in the morning,
Dane asks, standing with his arms crossed next to Garrick.
The riot won't make it past the coast if they don't get some rest tonight.
Not there either.
We can't trust anyone not to dig up whatever's left of her bones out of morbid curiosity.
Kat shakes her head.
There are dozens of uninhabited minor isles within a day's flight north. Pick one.
Kat, that's going to deviate us from the charted...
Drake starts.
Fucking pick one!
Kat snaps.
We can get back to all the good this,
she gestures around us,
is doing us after we burn them. I think they're worth losing a few days off the schedule.
Sova's head rises to the right and he clicks his beak. Drake looks in his direction, then nods.
Fine by me.
Will that mess too much up? Marin asks me quietly as if Kat isn't right next to her.
No, I shake my head. We can split up after they're given to Malik and search the minor isles three times as fast.
Most will only need a flyover. I look Kat in the eye. Then, when you're ready, we'll depart for Loisam. She nods.
It's kind of our last chance, isn't it? We're running out of isles.
I ignore the insidious kernel of truth her words shove in my face and straighten my spine.
That means we have to be close. The minor isles and Loisam border the edge of every map we have.
The prospect of complete failure at such a steep cost is too heavy to swallow. The group in the stands begins singing like they're in a damned tavern, like today's festivities are cause for celebration.
Great. Then we'll get to go home.
If it's still there. Kat draws her knees to her chest and glares over at the stands.
We're sleeping out here tonight.
Everyone agrees.
Kat, I'm so sorry, I start.
Don't be. She lays her head back on Marin's shoulder.
I'm the one who asked him to come.
A half hour later, beds are laid out within feet of one another inside the circle the dragons form, and watches are assigned.
I can't remember ever being this tired before.
The bone-weary exhaustion goes beyond fatigue, and my body is suffering for it. The dizzy flares, the screaming aches in every joint, the pain in my ribs, the urge to scratch out my stitches, and the knots in my muscles from trying to hold myself together are all getting worse by the day.
But it's my mind that fights me the hardest as I stare up at the stars from my back, reminding me of everything we have on the line and every way in which I'm failing. Mira called this a fool's errand. And maybe she was right.
Zayden pulls a light blanket over us as he lies at my side, then drapes his arm over my stomach.
We have 6 hours before third watch. Try and rest.
I turn onto my right shoulder, protecting my ribs, then lay my head on his biceps and look up at him.
I froze today.
The admission is a whisper in my mind. His brow knits and he splays his hand over my hip.
He was your year mate. You didn't freeze. You went into shock. It's understandable and why we travel as a squad.
Don't be nice just because you love me.
I rest my hand on the thin fabric of his undershirt, right over his heart. Except for our boots, we're still dressed and ready to fly at a moment's notice if need be. This is my mission. Traeger and Scylla are dead. Kat's heartbroken. And I froze.
Everyone in leadership loses someone under their command.
He strokes his hand absent-mindedly over my waist.
You pulled yourself together and completed the mission.
At the cost of their lives.
My chest constricts, fighting to contain the full confession that I can only give to him.
I'm not meant to lead. Mira should be in charge, or even Drake. If they won't, then you.
Because my judgment is dependable right now? He huffs a sarcastic sigh. The best leaders are the ones who never want the job. This is your mission because Andarna chose you. Tairn chose you.
His hand rises to my face. What they never tell us in the Quadrant is that rank is well and good, but you and I both know that the moment we fly onto the battlefield, it isn't the humans giving commands. I hate to break it to you, but you were selected by a general among dragons. You can choose to step into leadership or he can drag you. Either way, you're going to end up in front. My heart starts to race as his words pierce a shield of denial I wasn't even aware I'd been hiding behind, exposing a truth so blatantly obvious I feel foolish for not having seen it before. Tarn will always lead, and I will always be his rider. Coda speaks through Meldrin, not the other way around. Then Tarn chose poorly. The lump in my throat grows, and I'm torn between the pathetic instinct to wallow in self-pity and the opposing yet growing urge to channel a power greater than Tarn's, anger.
Say that to him when he's awake and see how it goes for you.
Zayden brushes his knuckles down my cheek. I've seen the moments you don't just rise to the occasion. You own it. Devarelli? Umbriel? You poisoned the entire triumvirate of Hedotis, for fuck's sake. Imagine who you'll become when you finally learn not to just embrace that confidence, but live it. You? I force a smile. Better than me. His thumb grazes my lower lip. You have to be. You promised to help me protect Tirindor, remember? I remember, I nod. I meant it. I'll stand by your side. Exhaustion slows my breath and weighs my eyelids. And between Andarna's kind and the research we're compiling about dark wielders, we'll cure you. My eyes give in, sliding shut.
There is no cure for me.
He presses a kiss to my forehead.
That's why you have to become better than me. There's only you.
Public Notice 634.23, transcribed by Percival Fitzgibbons. Conscription rates are hereby doubled for each province until further notice. Chapter 40. We fly northwest at dawn. Atrum clutches Traeger's body in his foreclaw. Tarn carries Scylla. The ocean turns the blackest shade of blue I've ever seen as we soar over deep waters, leaving the safety of the trade routes and the major isles behind in hopes the map has been drawn correctly. When night falls, and the ocean only reveals the reflection of the moon, fear sours my belly. If we've erred, the dragons will be able to turn around and fly for Zelna, but the griffins won't make it. There's every chance that choosing to bury Traeger and Scylla on a minor isle will cause us to bury the others, unless they consent to being carried. By the middle of the night, I'm ready to give up and order a return when Tarn spots land.
Thank you, Amari.
Not sure I'll ever pray to Zanal again.
The perimeter sweep of the tiny isle and its one hollow-tipped peak takes approximately 10 minutes, and after we're sure it's uninhabited, we land on a northern beach nearly as wide as Tarn's wingspan. It could be a trick of the night, but I'm pretty sure the sand is black. Power ripples through me and energy crackles along my skin with about half the intensity that it does in Navarre.
We found magic,
and more than there was on Zelna, too. The group seeks out fresh water from a nearby stream that runs through the beach, ensure the riot is hydrated, then make quick work of gathering wood from the edges of the jungle. Sweat drips down the back of my neck as we carry load after load to the high point of the wide beach, halfway between the tide line and the forest behind us. Once the pyre is built, we stand shoulder to shoulder, our backs to the jungle as Atrum lowers his head and sets the wood ablaze. The fire lights up the night, and heat washes over my face. Marin's shoulders shake. and Kat hooks her arm through her best friend's as she stares into the flames. My throat tightens at the pain in their faces, and Zayden laces our fingers.
Silurane and Traeger Karras, Drake says from the left, his voice booming over the roar of the bright fire and the crashing ocean waves behind it. With honor, love, and gratitude, we commend your souls to Malik.
And so it's done. We make camp close to the stream, and the flyers take turns keeping watch over the fire through the night. By morning, the flames rise no higher than a few inches. I fill water skins at the stream with Riddick, and when we walk back to camp, we find the others in a somber discussion.
I think we're off course, Drake says, fighting to hold the map with one hand and the squirmy kitten in the other. The paper's been folded so many times, holes have worn through the corners.
Give me that. To my surprise, Mira takes the kitten, not the map, cradling it against her chest with one hand.
Her name is Broccoli, not that, he mutters.
She looks at him like he sprouted whiskers.
You named a kitten Broccoli?
No one really wants broccoli, but it's good for you.
So seems fitting to me.
He shrugs. Now, that's clearly remnants of an old volcano. He gestures to the peak high above us. And the first marker for any such formation is here. His finger swipes over the detailed painting of a small archipelago on the northeast side of the Minor Isles. I start comparing landmarks.
We didn't fly that far, Zayden notes, folding his arms across his chest and studying the map.
Why not carrots? Mira asks, scratching under the kitten's chin.
She's orange.
Just to frustrate you, Sorengale, Drake answers, glancing up from the map. She scoffs.
I'd guess we're somewhere around here, Mira taps an area of open ocean farther south. And the map just doesn't show it. We haven't exactly been sending cartographers out this far.
I can see another isle from the edge of the point, Arik nods up the beach. Molvik can make out, too, past it.
Tern? I ask down our singular bond, letting Andarna sleep. She's utterly exhausted, and her wing trembled more than usual on the flight here.
We are at the southern tip of an island chain of volcanic formations.
He answers from high above us. It does not match anything on the map, though there is another mass of land an hour's flight due west with what appears to be sizable cliffs.
I squeeze in next to Mira and examine the map, then locate the isle fitting Tern's description, noting the map maker's symbol for cliffs. Then I track east with my finger and find only open water.
Pretty sure we're here from what Tern can see. I lift my head and look past Marin's shoulder out over the open water.
I'm guessing there are hundreds of islands out this way, not just the couple dozen the mapmakers recorded.
And you think we should search them all? Drake asks, incredulity puckering his forehead.
I look to Mira, but she just shrugs.
Not my call.
Zayden watches me just like he did last year, like he knows the answer but wants me to find it on my own.
As many as we can today. I straighten my shoulders and his mouth twitches upward.
We break into five groups. Marin and Kat take the unmapped islands to the north. Drake and Dane take this quadrant. I point to the nearest isles to our west, taking the Griffin's exhaustion into account. Arik and Mira, you go here. Zayden and Garrick, you take these. Riddick and I will take this section. I drag my finger to an eastern chain about 2 hours away. When I look up, everyone is staring at me.
What? I kept the Griffins close and paired dragons with similar flight strengths.
My gaze finds Zayden's, and he's not amused with my group pairings.
Except for ours. Tern and Segale have the best chance of staying in contact when separated if the rest of these islands have the same level of magic. It's better for the group if they split for the day.
He arches his scarred brow.
Just you and me today, honey bear. Garrick swings his arm over Zayden's shoulder.
Don't worry, he leans in and whispers. I'll take good care of you.
He flashes a dimple. Sun should set a little after 6, which gives us 9 hours. I nod, pretty damned satisfied with this. Meet back here before nightfall. If we find nothing, we go as a group toward the Southeast Isles tomorrow, then make the flight to Loisum,
where we'll have to resupply.
Solid plan, Mira says.
We can't go until the fire is out, Marin says. No one leaves an offering to Malik unattended.
Kat shifts her weight restlessly, giving the impression that she needs to be anywhere but here.
Riddick and I will stay until it burns out. I glance back at Indarna. Her breaths are deep and even as she sleeps at the edge of the jungle, her scales a shade blacker than the sand. That will give Indarna another hour or so to rest. Any other questions, comments, concerns?
Good to me.
Drake folds the map, and the group breaks apart to ready their packs, leaving Zayden staring at me.
Riddick glances between us. I'm going somewhere else.
He walks off toward the dying fire.
You can't tell me to lead and then get pissed at how I do it, I shrug.
He crosses the distance between us, leans down, and kisses me, hard and quick.
Be back by nightfall, love.
I grasp for his wrist, keeping him a second longer as I search his eyes. The flecks are still amber.
Are you all right? I whisper. There's magic and no wards.
He grimaces. It's tempting, and I don't even need it. But I can feel the power beneath my feet. And while I can wield enough to do this,
a wisp of inky black shadow curls up my leg around my torso and caresses the side of my face.
It's hard to know.